Tonight I'm going to do a shorter video on something that no Christians around me seem to want to talk about, so I will, and I'm going to be pretty brutal with it, so strap in. I wrote this about an hour ago, but on our main channel I've already posted a few other videos where I talk about other issues which tie into this. I'm going to try to keep this one short, and I'll probably fail because there's a lot to say. Now in this video I'm not just going to talk about women pastors, I also want to talk about women-controlled churches, which actually ties into the idea of women pastors. For clarity, what I mean by woman-controlled churches are churches in which women very clearly have sway over how things are done and what decisions are made. And anyone who's been to a church like this knows exactly what I'm talking about. I think women pastors are ruining the church, and I've never actually listened to a woman pastor and thought that she knew what she was talking about. So let's get into why I'm probably correct. Now to start with, we really need to understand the basics. Men and women are not the same. Conservatives always say this, but I don't think barely any of them actually believe this. I think it's rhetoric to them. Because even though they go on about how men and women are different, and all these boomers and Gen X conservatives will completely despite this, then go and act like women can do anything men can, and to the same extent. And better yet, a lot of them are actually controlled by their wives. Keep note of that, by the way, because that's going to come up again later, for sure. Take their statement and continue it to its logical conclusion. Men and women are different. Biologically, they're different. You know, physiologically, they're different. Psychologically, they're different. And spiritually, they're different. And as such, they are predisposed to things which men naturally are not. And because I actually take that statement of men and women being different to its conclusion, that means that there are certain things which men should not do. And there are certain things, on the contrary, which women should not be doing. For example, they should not be leading churches or pastoring. Now there's a number of reasons for this which I'll get into in this video. The first is the biological dispositions of women making them unable to properly fill this role. The second is the church refusing to acknowledge that fallen nature differs between men and women. The third is how modern culture has tied these together into the perfect synthesis for maximum chaos. To begin with, natural dispositions. Women and men are biologically different. That means physically and psychologically we operate differently. Again, like I said before, all these conservatives always say this, but they never actually admit why these differences are important. Probably so they don't offend their wives who will withhold sex from them. Physically, for example, women are naturally, on average, weaker than men. Men are designed to fight and defend. Men are by proxy born leaders, while women are not. And if women land in leadership positions in ancient societies, it was usually only out of a lack of alternatives. In other words, it was the exception, not the rule, and it was never preferable to having an honorable and strong man leading. Psychologically, it's a similar story. Women are wired primarily around having and raising children. This means they're prone to acting in an illogical manner dictated by emotion rather than reason or rationalism. This worsens in stressful situations. Now, biblically, a woman's emotional perspective serves as a help and counterpoint to the rational mind of a man. Alone, however, a woman's nature is to primarily nurture children, which in many ways actually does require a level of irrationality, because children are not exactly beings a logical person would want around all the time, since they cost a lot, they consume a lot, they make a lot of chaos, and in general are not productive for like the first 15 years of their life. Women can cope with this because they are compelled by their emotions towards children rather than rationality. And this is actually sort of replicated by God's love for humanity. However, when it comes to leadership, this all goes out the window when it comes to women. When women are placed in absolute authority, which they are in today's society and Christianity, this emotional dictation becomes problematic. For example, politics today is largely oriented around emotional cues. For example, the abortion argument and mass migration, foreign wars and other nonsensical endeavors are all partially spurred forward by playing on the emotions of women rather than on rational arguments. Closing the border to the, you know, never-ending influx of migrants is, according to many women, mean. And banning abortion is mean, and so forth. It's mean. You hear that stuff a lot. I could go on, but I have a feeling this video is going to be longer than I expected. In retrospect, the first point should be obvious. Women are naturally not predisposed to lead in a physical sense, and psychologically there are some fundamental weaknesses which men do not possess. However, men possess other weaknesses such as, you know, the proclivity to become corrupted in the pursuit of power or whatever. But that is very different to the much more obvious flaw that women leaders have, which is this proclivity to rely on illogical emotions rather than rationality. The second major point is the fallen nature of men versus the fallen nature of women. Biblically, we know that man has a fallen attitude or predisposition. Since the fall, man and woman have lacked the communion with God, which kept our spirit, soul, and body in working alignment. Without this alignment, man began to act in degenerate ways, spurred on by a misalignment of soul and flesh. We often hear this in church, but interestingly, we only hear about the fallen state of man referring to men, not women. The fallen nature of man, as exemplified from the story of Cain and Abel onwards, includes a proclivity for violence and murder, rage, lust, and the desire for power and vulnerability to moral corruption. Everyone knows this because this is what churches talk about when they talk about man's sinful nature or fallen nature or whatever. They always talk about this, and that's good because men need to overcome these things. However, the fallen nature of women is different, and it's never discussed. There are a few characteristics we see in scripture: deception, illogical behavior in a negative sense, the desire to control the husband, as we see in the Genesis 3 curse, the desire to rebel against authority, and so forth. This is found throughout scripture, but specifically in Genesis 3 with Eve and the curse from God, then with the story of Delilah, with the story of Jezebel, with the story of Salome, and in Proverbs 7. In fact, there's a few other places in Proverbs as well, which exemplifies these negative characteristics. The counterpoint, however, what a good and godly woman looks like, is detailed in Proverbs 31, famously. By the way, if you say that in some churches, as I've found, people will actually get offended, even at the last part about Proverbs 31 being the ideal woman, because it's about a woman that stays at home. So that's telling, but more on that later. In fact, one of the first sins in the Bible following Adam and Eve's eating of the fruit is actually highlighted by God when he talks to them. In Genesis 3, God says to Adam that he essentially failed to be in control in the relationship and obeyed the command of his wife to eat rather than commanding her to stop. This suggests that, you know, things could have turned out differently if Adam refused. This is in the same passage of Genesis 3 where there's the curse on man and woman from God. Interestingly, Genesis 3:16, which is God's curse to Eve, reads in most Protestant translations like this: "Your desire will be for your husband, but he will rule over you." Now, people often wonder, how is that a curse? Yet if we look at the Hebrew wording, that term desire is not actually a love desire, which is what people believe, which makes no sense. It is a desire to control or have possession over. It's a different word. In fact, there are only two other times this particular phrase is used in the entire Bible. The first is in Genesis 4:7, when God tells Cain that sin's desire is for him and is crouching at his door. This is obviously referring to sin's desire to control him. The other usage is in Song of Solomon 7:10, where it says that I belong to my beloved and his desire is for me. Again, this is referring to a possessing idea, which ties into the concept of man being either a slave to sin or a slave to righteousness. But anyways, from Genesis 3 onwards, woman was cursed by God to act contrary to her husband. In fact, some translations of Genesis 3 actually literally say this. And for context, how a woman should act as a Christian is, as I mentioned earlier, actually detailed in Proverbs 31. So just like with man's fallen nature, where we have the problems listed and then the counterpoint, which is made evident in Jesus, we also have the problem and counterpoint for a woman's fallen nature made evident throughout the Bible as well. The church, of course, only ever addresses the fallen nature of man, and then acts like there is no equivalent to women, but we know that's clearly false, as we've just seen. Here's a hint, women are not particularly prone to go on, violent rampages like unhinged men are, or to, seek maximum monetary power, because they are biologically and psychologically different and spiritually different. Women are also not lust addicted as much as a lot of young men are today. It's a different cause and effect. Like, it's so obvious we are not the same, and women did not suffer from the same problems from the fall. So with these two points together, consider that most women pastors are not in a natural position when they are leading churches. Their temperaments do not align with leading men in a church because they are not biologically or psychologically built for this. I think that often they will actually defer back to their natural impulses from after the fall, and I've seen this a lot. Now, on the few occasions I've been to women-led churches, one of the things I've found is that the women pastors often believe the same things that the women as a whole in the church often believe. They usually all believe the same thing. Now, I think that's because they want to stand out amongst the other women, which is some, biological selection thing, which I think is immature. But also, I found that a lot of women in general in the church only really want messages which have, quote-unquote, good vibes or good energy or whatever they call it. It's this weird sort of feminine energy thing where nothing controversial or critical is ever said, and they'll act like this is the most profound thing ever, but you subconsciously know you've heard this all before, this exact thing before. None of it's sort of new. And I'd say that's specifically the case amongst the younger women. I'd say women from like previous generations don't suffer from this as much. This leads to another problem. Because women biologically and psychologically try to avoid conflict because they want to raise children, the female ideas of love today have been warped into something ridiculous. Essentially, most women, younger women, and most guys as well actually today, think that love is not offending someone, or they think that love is accommodating everyone. In actuality, love is peacemaking, not peacekeeping. It means being honest. It means calling out evil because you care more about people's eternity than you do about how they perceive you or if you cause offense, okay? Women today, including women pastors, will rarely take that view on love. Here's an example. I went to a church with a woman pastor once, and the woman started talking on stage about how great immigration was, like mass immigration. As she put it, because she can travel all over the world just by driving around our city. Not a joke, by the way, she actually said that stuff. She then went on about how great mass migration is because we are loving everyone. No mention of the gospel. In another instance, a group of women were offended that the church was calling out the LGBT stuff because that means they don't love them. Again, nothing about the gospel mentioned. See the connection? It is compliance and subjugation. That is the vibe here. Since we love vibes so much. There's always, the Mother's Day service, another example, about how great the mothers are. Then there's the Father's Day service, which is always about how, God is our real father, or about how fathers need to be better. It's a joke. Now imagine if you did a Mother's Day service about how women need to improve in this culture. How do you think that would go? You would never be asked to speak there again, and all the women would be outraged. And they'd be complaining to their husbands and say, "You need to go speak to the pastor because I'm so offended right now." So predictable, right? Not only does that not conform to the peaceful, prevailing narrative in the West today about, equality and or whatever and accommodating everyone, but it also challenges the unchallenged feminine spirit in the church today, which is really the core issue more than any of these, equality messages in the secular media, which I'm about to get into. Now, at this point, considering what I've just said, before we move into the next part, a certain societal development must be highlighted, which plays into all this and makes all these problems worse, and that is feminism. Specifically, since the 1950s, a string of feminist movements have slowly but steadily swung the power in society on the individual level from men to women. Women today see this as a great thing, and yes, go talking to your local conservative women, I'm sure they think it's great as well. In reality, what it did was invert the dynamic within families. Based off of biblical scripture, the classical view was that man was the head of the household, and the woman was his valuable helper in these endeavors. Likewise, before women's suffrage, the idea was that there should be one vote per household. The idea was based off of the scripture that a household divided against itself will fall. And naturally, if a man and woman who were married were both given separate ballots, the inference was obviously that they can vote against each other for opposite or contradicting ideas, indicating instability within the household. From the 1960s onwards, there were two other developments. Arguably, the first was the slow rigging of the judicial system to quote-unquote favor women. The most destructive outcomes of this was the rise in no-fault divorces, the vast majority of which are initiated by women, as has been proven statistically. By the way, no-fault divorces are now the most common type of divorce in the US. Another outcome was the ability for women to seize half of the assets or property held by the husband, even if she never owned it or worked for it. Again, this is incentivized divorce because this also applies in no-fault separations. The other outcome from this judicial rigging was almost always giving possession of children to the mother. One of the strangest outcomes of this was the assumption that women were somehow better carers for children overall in single households. We know biblically that children are supposed to be raised in two-parent households. Okay, anything else is not good. However, in reality, even single mother households were not good enough. In reality, it was found that single mothers are far more likely to abuse their children, albeit usually emotionally. The only logical reason to show this bias towards women then was to play into their emotions, not for the well-being of children or for the well-being of the father or mother. The judicial system entices women who aren't quote-unquote feeling emotionally fulfilled to divorce, and essentially guarantees not only that they will keep their children, but they will also receive assets and financial benefits from their partners they are separating from. The end result is the destruction of family and order, and I think that was the goal from the beginning. It doesn't benefit anyone. The other major development was on the social front. Partially as a result of slowly changing laws, the social view on women changed drastically to accommodate this. Because women now had so much legal power, technically speaking, guys basically had to be very careful about what they said and did in relationships. And remember, a lot of the rights given to women were actually sort of unnatural to them and put them in an unnatural position of authority over guys, which they didn't even want. And so it wasn't just that guys had to behave themselves. It also meant that because women were in this unnatural position of power and they were usually emotionally illogical, it meant that guys had to submit just to retain relationships at all. The guy has to submit himself to her to please her, and if he doesn't, she now has the ability to just leave because she can't illogically control the husband. Again, this is all illogical, and most of the time women don't even want to do this stuff, but because they don't have guidance from a good husband or boyfriend or father or whatever, no one knows what they're doing and it's just chaos. This change happened especially amongst Gen X. Now, from personal experience, I can say that Gen X are probably the most pathetic simps around. They have this strange woman-worshipping mentality, and this definitely extends to Christians and conservatives more broadly today, unlike any other time. Especially when it comes to sexual stuff, like especially that whole idea in the church today, which is that a healthy relationship is built on sex. You always hear that stuff. And you need to have lots of sex when you get married for a healthy relationship. That's all Gen X. Like, no one before that was ranting and raving about that stuff or, you know, going on about how their wife let them have sex. And I really think that if you're a younger person and you have this sex-obsessed mentality, even if it's in marriage, you're just a simp. Like, you need to get out of that. You need to get out of this modernist, pathetic, garbage mentality and focus on bigger things. Because again, this sex-obsessed culture naturally just further elevates the power of the feminist movement to have control over men, and it means that a lot of guys are just lust-obsessed in marriage. Not good. Now, before getting into the next section, I believe that most men today, as a result of what I've just explained, are not only in fear and thus subjugated to their wives and girlfriends because they don't want them to leave, but I also believe that in marriage, most men have become sort of pathetic, and their wives use sex as a tool to control them. This actually contradicts what Paul says in the Bible when, firstly, he says that no one should withhold their bodies in marriage to their partners in such a way to sort of hold something over their partner. Nevertheless, that is clearly what's happening today. Men are controlled because the dynamic allows their wives to withhold sex if they do something they don't like. Now, instead of just blaming women for this, which is what a lot of people are doing, I'm actually going to also blame the guys here. I think if you desire sex by itself so much, to the point where if your wife or girlfriend isn't letting you do anything, that it actually affects you and compels you to subjugate yourself to her, you're actually pathetic and you actually are lustful. But anyways, now remember, feminism first really started around the 1930s and again in the late 1950s. I mean, there was also a point in the late 1800s where it was big. But anyway, and again in the 1990s. At each stage, they lobbied for more and more rights, or so-called rights. A lot of them didn't benefit women at all. And here's an important consideration. You don't need to be a leftist or liberal to be a feminist, in my view. In fact, most conservatives hold feminist views from the 1950s and 60s. The position so-called feminists hold today in regards to women and their roles would have been considered profoundly liberal in the 50s and 60s if you talk to normal people. You know, the time period they fantasize about in the 50s. If they were alive back then and they held the views they did today, people would have considered them essentially leftist back then, because it's been more than a generation. So a lot of the people today just consider the byproducts of the counterculture and the hippie movement as just like facts. They just the claims that they made back then during the hippie movement and the counterculture, conservatives today just take as fact or as truth, because it's been a certain amount of time. But obviously it isn't truth, because back then they were communists and they promoted certain ideas to destroy American culture. Now, with all that in mind, let's get back into it. This really brings me to where we are today. Women make up over 60% of the congregation of most Protestant churches in America. Christian men are also now subjugated to their wives and to women more broadly, worse than I've ever seen it. Even when I was younger, a lot of guys weren't simping as bad as they are now. Like, it's really pathetic. Even older people as well, something's really changed. Women thus have majority sway over most churches and the direction they head in. Remember, most churches are primarily concerned about retaining an audience, and if their majority audience is women, guess what? See where this is going? This leads to appeasement. The reason this is so worrying is because today appeasement means going along with worldly narratives. And these worldly narratives are increasingly anti-American and anti-Western. And there's another dynamic at play. We live in a time where speaking the truth is considered increasingly offensive, especially Christian truth. Women, in quite the contrary manner, do not like controversy, or at least most of them don't, especially in regards to political controversy, which directly challenges their claim to the freedom to divorce or change relationships or get abortions or whatever. It just so happens to be the case that most major conservative political issues today, such as abortion and hookup culture, you know, women being mothers, marriage and so forth, all directly concern this claim that women must necessarily go back to a more traditional standard. Keeping in what I explained with a woman's fallen nature, their fallen nature naturally compels them to both reject a man's claim to biblical authority in marriage and a judicial move back towards traditional views on sex and marriage and so-called sexual freedom and all the other stuff that came out of the hippie movement in the 60s. Likewise, women are wired to raise children and avoid conflict, even if it means submitting to a corrupt narrative with the promise of social peace. Men who are honorable are not bound by this, and will actually speak the truth even if it causes an uproar. Finally, women actually naturally require the guidance of their partners in a lot of this stuff, again because men usually are rational and women are usually emotional. They balance each other out. If they're not balanced out, you get problems. And here's an analogy of that. Classically, men were associated with the sun and women with the moon. You know why? Because men could produce, or at least they were perceived to be able to produce their own light and radiance. Within the church, this was, in my view, by emanating Christ to their families, to their wives and families, and by having the masculine ability to build and create the world around them. Women were like the moon. They were beautiful, and they were illuminated by an outward source. Now, this should be God, as well as either a husband or a boyfriend or a father, depending on what stage in life they're at. through which the woman reflects beauty and love. However, without any of that, and remember, most women are technically single today, without any of that, I reckon most of them just reflect what they perceive as the next best thing, and that is today's worldly culture, pop culture. They will absorb and reflect worldly culture, and it will alter who they are. This is why so many churches are completely and utterly under the sway of worldly culture. And remember, according to the Bible itself, worldly culture is of this world, and the prince of the air and ruler of this world, according to scripture, is the devil. Tying all this back together, women who are placed into the position of pastor are in an unnatural position. They are ruling over men, and they are dictating the direction in which the church must head. Most women pastors, especially the ones I've seen, will never say anything controversial, because they seek to appease the prevailing narrative. They also, because no one is spiritually guiding them, will almost never call out the fallen nature of women, because again, most Christians are in marriages in which the woman has control over her husband through sex or through emotional manipulation. It creates a never-ending cycle where no one calls it out or addresses it, and it rolls on into the next generation. And again, to call out guys here, I think part of this is also because a lot of guys are not strong enough leaders where their wives will actually respect them. A lot of them are simps, and they simp over stuff like sex and simp over, you know, all these menial things instead of actually manning up and leading their wives. Finally, a lot of women pastors cannot craft a compelling or heroic narrative to entice the truth-seeking young men to enter the church. In fact, I would say that most women-run churches are actually hostile to young men who have this heroic narrative because they are guided by the feminine spirit, which seeks attention and appeasement and good vibes and compliance over unrelenting truth-seeking, which causes offense. Now, in these videos, I usually reuse a lot of these same clips in the background. I know I've got one of Stephen Furtick skitzing out on stage. There's one of like Pastor Morris or whatever his name is who worships Israel. There's one of that guy that looks like a thug who got fired from Hillsong for cheating on his wife like four times or something. And best of all, there's this music video of women just like going crazy all over the place on stage. And these clips I like using because even without me saying anything, I think they exude the type of like sort of soft, uncontroversial slop energy that I'm talking about in this video and in a lot of videos I've done recently. And men pastors do this as well today. So it's not just women pastors, I'm not just blaming women, but all in all, it all ties together. And the clips I've selected for a lot of my videos, I think have this quality, which I've seen in churches with women pastors and even men pastors, which really drives away motivated young guys and even traditional young women. Because there's something foreign and weak about this sort of stuff. There's something sort of like off-putting about this. It doesn't seem like iconic, it doesn't seem cool, it just seems like weird. But anyway, the story doesn't end there. For the last bit, I just want to highlight a few issues that are almost always present in churches I've seen which are run by women. Either a woman pastor directly or actually more so these women majority controlled congregations. Number one, women want almost everything to be co-ed. This means that there are far fewer men's only spaces, and if they do exist, women want to have some level of control over them. This also means there's far fewer women's only spaces. We actually do need a lot of spaces for women only, so women can just hang out together, and guys only, so that guys can hang out together. Because again, that creates sisterhood and brotherhood. When you have these co-ed spaces, what usually happens from what I've seen, there will always be a guy that's simping for women, and there will always be women trying to get attention from the guys. And it means that the women are backstabbing each other and the men are backstabbing each other. It's just pathetic, and it really throws off this whole idea of brotherhood and fraternity and sisterhood. We need to go back to that. Number two, women do not like men's humor. This should be very obvious. This should come as no surprise. Women have always found the things guys joke about to be offensive. This is especially true about young guys who are single, you know, who usually joke about stuff to do with women and how women look and relationships and whatever. While men's humor has always been incompatible with what, you know, most women find funny or acceptable, The key difference is that in women-controlled churches, this type of humor, which is actually sort of necessary for guys to bond over, is scrutinized and essentially outlawed. I've literally seen this happen. Guys will stop joking about certain things, or they will, you know, self-censor because either their wives or other women in their lives say, you know, they don't want them to do that stuff. Don't say that stuff. Any guys who have been in a similar situation know exactly what I'm talking about when I say that it literally changes the dynamic and things feel off once some of the guys who are like either simping or whatever start acting like this to appease their wives. A lot of stuff starts feeling artificial, like you're almost hanging out with another woman who you might offend. It's almost like you're hanging out with the guy's wife because by proxy, you know, you're hanging out with a guy who wants to censor the humor or whatever. We can't have that, okay? Yes, women will get offended at men's humor. Men have a different sense of humor. Who cares? This leads me to another point. Number 3, offense culture is huge in women-controlled churches. I don't even really need to explain why this is the case. However, it does tie into the next one. Number 4, gossip in women-controlled churches is huge. This is something that is actually, in my opinion, unignorable today in most churches. Gossip and slander are huge, and I would say this is because women who have sway over these congregations or communities literally run rampant without any controlling authority to correct this behavior. Slander and gossip is often an outward working of a woman's jealousy. You know, while guys who are jealous are more forward and violent, women are more, you know, they gossip and stuff. Ironically, I think that this actually affects women more than it affects guys in a bad way. I actually personally know a number of women who have left churches because of gossip, because other more popular women slander them and gossip about them and straight up lie about them. And this leads to them, you know, being hurt and leaving, which is actually a justified response. So that needs to stop. Finally, number 5, women-controlled churches will never truly, in my opinion, push back against modernity and worldly culture and create a proper Christian counterculture. This is my final point. Women today are increasingly claiming to be trad or conservative. You see all these conservative women podcasts and stuff, but here's the thing. I don't believe churches under the sway of the feminine spirit will ever truly push back against worldly culture until things change. Keep in mind, I mean truly push back. The difference between having conservative rhetoric and truly rejecting what is going on is evident in action and response. I don't believe successful pushback will happen right now because I think there are still too many issues today which even so-called traditional conservative women do not believe in. Let me list a couple. Most conservative women do not believe in submitting to a husband's leadership in marriage. Again, if you marry an honorable guy, the Bible says to submit to him and his leadership, and he will submit to God. A lot of them don't believe in that. Second, most conservative women are too lenient on social issues like, you know, abortion or mass migration and stuff like that, that they're not going to really push back against it because they think it's mean or it creates, you know, bad vibes or whatever, or it's critical. Need I say more? And again, most conservative women still desire the attention of men and want men to simp for them. I don't really need to go on about that. I think it's pretty obvious. The list goes on. This is just a taste. Until these issues are addressed, these women run churches, no matter the rhetoric. Most of them are in practice not culturally traditional or not actually traditional at all. And because they do not agree with traditional values on a fundamental level, only maybe on a rhetorical level, but not on a fundamental level, they will never actually be able to lobby for traditional values to return, or effectively push back against modernity to return the church to a more traditional position. But anyways, I'm getting tired. This video is getting way longer than I thought, and I've gone off script way too many times. This was not an anti-women video. I think that men and women have specific roles, and both men and women are in serious trouble right now. We need to return to having guys actually acting like guys and being masculine and not simping and not being weak. And we need women to essentially go back to being women, not trying to be leaders or whatever. So in retrospect, if you think women pastors should be a thing, I think you're just wrong.